Welcome to Gemara Markings. Today's shiur is Kiddushin Daf Nun Ches. Don't forget to click on the Daf option in order to view a specially marked Daf Gemara for today's shiur. If you are not fully familiar with our Gemara marking system and wish to benefit from its great rewards, it is essential that you study all of the introductory material accessed by clicking on the Learn the System option provided on the sidebar of our homepage and then go to option 2. If you're already partially familiar, you will benefit by clicking on the brief 4-minute introduction that is available here. Being that our system is a visual approach to the Daf Gemara, it is recommended that you print out the marked Daf before the shiur. If you wish to be in touch with us, we can be reached at gmarkings@gmail.com. Today's shiur begins in the middle of Daf Nun Ches. If you prefer, you can count 22 lines from the top. We have a quote from the Mishnah that had dealt with being Mekadish, a woman trying to marry a woman by offering her Isurei Hano, items forbidden to benefit from, and of course offering her those items would not be a successful means of establishing a marriage. The Mishnah also said, Mochron, if those forbidden items were sold, the Kidesh B'demayim, and with the money that you received from the sale, you were to offer the woman in marriage in order to gain her acceptance to your marriage offer, Mikudeshes, then she would be married. What we see here is that the prohibition that was on the original item in its sale does not transfer onto the money. This idea of a status of item and its status being transferred onto money exists in other areas of halacha. The most common area is where you deal with the redemption of a sanctified item, where the sanctity leaves the item and gets transferred onto the money. We will see shortly other examples of transfer of item status onto money. In the case of the forbidden items in the Mishnah, so that status, the forbidden status, does not transfer onto the money that you receive in exchange for their sale. The Gemara, Minolan, from where do we know that that is the case? That there's no tfisa, there's no grabbing of the prohibition upon the money. The Gemara answers, Midegoli Rachmona Bavodis Kechavim. From the revelation of the Torah regarding idols, idolatry, v'hoyisa cherem kamoihu, that's the pasuk. Kol she'ata mehaya heimena harehu kamo. When it comes to idolatry, so anything that you make from it, mehaya, that you make from the idols. In this case, we'll talk about the sale of the idols. You're making a sale of the idols, and the money that you get in exchange for the idol becomes usur, like the original idol. So we say that in the case of idolatry, there the transfer takes place. We can say either transfer or replication of the isser, because in the case of the sale of an idol, the original idol remains an idol, and the prohibition is replicated upon the money. However, we say michlal. We infer though the chol isurim sheba Torah sharu, that all other prohibitions of the Torah in their sale, the money is mutter. So once again, in the case of idolatry, there the money becomes usur, becomes forbidden. But all other isurim, the money remains mutter. Question, v'neilaf mina, why do we not use idolatry actually as a precedent setter? Now, just like in the case of the sale of an idol, the money that you get in its exchange is prohibited, just like the original item. say the same thing in the case of the sale of, let us say, Orla or Kilei HaKerem or any of the other items listed in the Mishnah. The Gemara answers, and before we go further, let us pause for a moment and glance at the side where we have a nosei. The nosei, the topic heading, essentially is that which we've already said, and it reads, Hamoker, the source, loimar, to say, the isure hano, harushumim, b'mishnosenu, the forbidden items that are listed in the Mishnah, enom toifsim demehem. The prohibition does not grab upon, doesn't get transferred onto the money. Under the Mivneh, the structural note, where we are now in the text going to encounter this volcano shape marking, these are tshuvos la-sheila, answers to the question, loma lo nilma me'avodazora l'shari surim, shi'tafes demehem be'isor. Why is it that we do not say that idolatry shall be the precedent setter for all other prohibited items, that the prohibition of the original item should set upon the money? So why not? The Gemara answers. We go back to our Gemara text, and we also note this is number one. You'll see later on the page a number two. Mishum dahave avudis kechavim ushvias shnei ksuvim haboyim keachod. In addition to avudis kechavim, idolatry, there's also the issue of seventh year produce, vegetation that grows during the seventh year. If you were to sell fruits of the seventh year, so just like the original fruit has shvias, has shmita restrictions. We'll call it henceforth Kedusha Shvias. The money that you get in the sale of a Shemitah fruit will also become Kadosh Kedusha Shvias. So we see the idea of replication of original item status onto money in two instances. That's called Shnei Ksuvim Haboyim Kechod. And the rule states that when you have two examples stated in the Torah of a particular law, the Torah wants to limit that particular law or phenomenon to just those two cases. And that's called Shnei Ksuvim Haboyim Kechod, two psukim, two halachas that come to teach me the same principle. And when you have that called Shnei Ksuvim Haboyim Kechod, Ein Melamdin. Ein Melamdin means they do not teach to other cases. They do not serve as a precedent. There is a long bracketed section. Use your bracket length indicator. Let's skip it for a moment. And the Gemara, you'll see, we pick up the third wide line, Ha nicha leman da'amar ein melamdin, that you can say by all other prohibited items, the money does not become likewise prohibited. That is fine, according to the opinion that says, ein melamdin, that shnei ksuvim haboyim kechod ein melamdin. In other words, like we said, by idolatry and shvias, we see the idea of isor replication onto the money, but only there because shnei ksuvim haboyim kechod ein melamdin. They cannot serve as a precedent setter. Elo leman diomar melamdin ma'ikol aveimar. There's another school of thought that says that even though you have shnei ksuvim haboyim kechod, they can serve as a precedent setter. If that's the case, then all other isurim also would be, we'll say, candidates for the tfisas isur, for the grabbing upon the money of that particular prohibition, just like you find by avodah zarah and shvias. So how would you know if you hold in general shnei ksuvim haboyim kechod melamdin? How would you know that by other isurim the money does not become prohibited? And that's what the Mishnah holds, that on other isurim the money does not become prohibited by virtue of the fact that you can, if you sell a prohibited item, you can use the money to marry the woman. The Gemara answers, mi'uti ksivi. Here, it's not a function of merely shnei ksuvim haboyim kechod. that wouldn't have prevented me from learning to other cases. But in regarding this topic of tfisas kedusha or tfisas isur on the money, when you learn the topic of idolatry and the topic of shvius, we have limitations in the psukim themselves, limitations or exclusionary phrasing that tells us that only in these cases does this phenomenon apply or occur, replication of Isur on the money, and not in any other case. And where do you see two exclusionary verses? The Gemara explains, Ksiv Hocha, by idolatry, it says, Ksiv Hocha means it says over here means by idolatry, Ki Cherem Hu. The word Hu means it, the idolatry. Only there do we say there is replication of the prohibition. Cherem is a word indicating something that's forbidden. So only there do we have that phenomenon of the money becoming forbidden. And Uksiv Hosam, and by Shvius, you see the expression Yovel He. Yovel means the Jubilee year, but that's also it also applies to the Shemitah year. And in that pasuk, you see a limitation, the word he, it alone. He, in, by the Yovel and Shemitah, yes. There you see replication of Isur, of prohibition on the money, replication of Kiddush on the money. Midi achrino lo, but not in any other case. Throughout the Gemara, we had mentioned that by Avodah Zorah, you find replication of Isur. And we had cited a pasuk earlier for that, Vayisa Cherem Kamohu. And by Shemitah, we mentioned that the Kedusha Shvius grabs upon the money, but we didn't say where you see that or where you what's the source for that. Within the bracketed section, we will give you the source for the Shemitah as well. And at that point in the Gemara, we were saying you have Shnei Ksuvim Haboim Ke'echod. So now let's go back to the bracketed section. Avodas Kechavim Hodamoran. One of the two topics was idolatry, and that we already said, Hodamoran is that which we already said. We saw the Pasuk saying that the money received from the sale of idols also becomes prohibited. Shvius Maihi, what's the scriptural source for Shvius, that the sale of Shemitah fruits in exchange for money, that the money or whatever item you get in exchange for those fruits, for that matter, becomes prohibited with Kedusha Shvius as well? Yovel hi kodesh tie lochem. The pasuk obviously is speaking about Yovel, but it also mentions kodesh. Ma kodesh toifes es domov, just like that which has been sanctified. And we know in the case of redemption, so the holy status that was on the original sanctified item gets transferred onto the money, hence the term toifes es domov. The sanctity grabs upon the money. Af shvius toifes es domeha, so too the fruits of the sabbatical year, of the Shemitah year, have the power to have their sanctity grab upon the money. Well, ima kodesh teifes es doma v'yotze l'chulin, af shvius teifes es doma v'yotze l'chulin. Are you going to say that we should carry the analogy all the way and say, just like when you have something sanctified and you redeem it, the sanctity rests upon the money, the original item becomes mundane, leaves its sanctified status, so too by Shvius produce, the sanctity associated with those fruits gets transferred onto the money and the original fruits become common, mundane fruits, losing their Shvius, their Shemitah status. Well, we don't say that. So why not? Talmud Lomar Tiyeh, Bahav Yosoi Tehe. The pasuk that we read before said Yovel hi kodesh tiyeh lochem, and the word tiyeh means it remains as it is. Ketzad. Now an illustration, and here we'll see a long chain of events with regard to the sale of Shemitah produce in exchange for other items. And what we have to focus on is the transfer of the Shvius status, called Kedusha Shvius, onto the new item, and the original fruits retaining their sanctified or their Shvius status. So here we have an example. Lokach b'peiros Shvius Basar. You used Peiros Shvius and offered it to someone in exchange for meat. Eilu v'eilu misbarim b'shvius. The fruits and the meat are to be misbarim. Misbarim from the word biur, destroyed, in the Shemitah year when that particular fruit goes out of season. That's a rule that applies to Shemitah produce. When we spoke about Kedusha Shvius, part of the Kedusha status is states that when the fruit is no longer in season, where, let us say, animals in the wild will not find those fruits growing anymore, that's a sign that those fruits that you might have in your possession must be destroyed, misbarin. Likewise, the meat in this example. If you, let us say, you had given some Shvius oranges for meat, or Shvius grapes for meat, when the grapes go out of season, so just like the grapes need to be destroyed, the meat that you got for those grapes needs to be destroyed. But the chain of events goes on. Bebosar dogim. After acquiring the meat for the Shvius fruits, you then took the meat and exchanged it for fish. Yotza bosar nichnesu dogim. The Shvius status that was on the meat transfers to the fish. The fish now gain the Shvius status, and the bosar loses it. In this case, the bosar becomes returns to its status as common meat without any Shvius restrictions. Bedogim yayin, in exchange for those fish, for wine. Yotsu dogim nichnas yayin. The fish lose their Shvius status and the wine gains it. Beyayin shemen, he sold that wine in exchange for oil. Yotsa yayin nichnas shemen. Ha kesat, how can we describe then this whole affair? Achron achron nitvas b'shvius u'peiriyatz mo'aser. Each subsequent item gains the shvius status, the previous item losing it, but the original fruits, they retain their shvius status. What we have demonstrated here within the bracketed section is that just like in idolatry, the money received in exchange for the idols becomes prohibited, so too in Shvius, the item that you receive in exchange for Shvius also becomes restricted, like Shvius. And the Gemara said, that's Shnei Ksuvim Haboyim Ke'echad. Two verses that teach me the same principle, and from that we do not learn to other things. Then we saw the Gemara says, that's fine according to one school of thought, but according to the school of thought that says Shnei Ksuvim Haboyim Ke'echad Melamdin, why then by other Isurim don't we apply what we saw by Avodah Zorah and by Shvius? To that the Gemara answered, because by Avodah Zorah and by Shvius we have specific exclusions in those two topics, saying that replication of prohibition applies only in Avodah Zorah and Shvius and not with regard to other Isurim. The Mishnah. Hamekadesh betrumois uvemaisros, a man who offers a woman for her marriage, he offers her trumos, the tithe that is given ordinarily to kohanim and is forbidden to be eaten by non-kohanim. if he gives her maisrus, the maisr tithe, uva matonus. Matonus are the zra l'chayva keva, different parts of a chulin animal that's slaughtered, that are generally given to kohanim. Uva mechatos, the water that is used in purifying someone who is defiled to the dead. Uve efer pora, the ash of a pora aduma, also part of the process. It's used in purifying someone who is defiled to the dead. So you have five items that are listed here. Harezu mikudeshes ve'afilu Yisrael. In each one of these cases, they would be effective kesef kiddushin, even if you are dealing with a Yisrael. Yisrael meaning a non-Kohen. Rashi, toward the end of the narrow line, says, Vafilu hu Yisrael, v'kosalka daitoch. The thinking right now is, this is going to be subject to change in the Gemara, but the thinking right now is, Afo pi she'ein lo b'chol elu elotoivas hano. Even if the person who's giving this to the woman doesn't have any actual physical rights. When I say physical rights, he cannot eat these things. What value does he have in this? He has Tovas Hanah. What does Tovas Hanah mean? Shebiyodoi lesitam l'chol mi shiyirtze. He has the power of choice to give them to whomever he wants. That choice to give to someone, even though it's something that you cannot personally eat, you have this level of benefit of choosing to whom to give it. Of course, when someone receives something from you, especially something that could have been given to someone else, so that first person will feel indebted to you. What we just described is called Toivas Hanah. Vegam he lo zochsal b'toyus hanazu shehitzri cholit lutnam lekoyin v'maisul levi, and the woman who received these, she isn't a kohen, and as such, she gets in. What does she get out of it? In order to marry a woman, you have to give her something of value. What's the value she has in this? She too, upon receiving it, can decide to whom to give it. The trumos to a kohen, the maestris to a levi, umiktisho b'toyves hanazu, and through that value, through that, we'll call that pleasure that she has, the prerogative that she has in deciding to whom to give it, she becomes married. The kosovar, and here's the key phrase for the continuation of the Gemara, the Mishnah represents an opinion that holds Tovas Hanah Mamam. Tovas Hanah, this prerogative unto whom to give these items, is mamon, is something of actual monetary value. And being such, I am, when a non-Kohen gives trumos to a non-Kohenis, I am enabling her, I am giving her something of actual value. And just to repeat ourselves, what's the value she gets in these things? The value of choosing to whom to give it, and thereby creating ultimately a sense of indebtedness on the part of the one who ultimately receives it, the Kohen or the Levi who ultimately receives it. The Gemara, Omar Ula, Toivas Hanah Eino Mamon. Ula makes a statement that this concept of Toivas Hanah is not something of value, i.e., Rashi gets right to the point. He says it's not Momon Lekadish Boishi. You cannot marry a woman with Toivas Hanah. Esve Rabbi Abba Liula. So Rabbi Abba raises the what to us probably is the obvious question: our Mishnah, Hamekadish Betrumos Uve Maestros Uve Matonos Bemechatos Uefer Pora Harezu Mikudeshes V'Afilu Yisrael. Oh, you see, let's focus just on one of the examples. Truma can be given by a Yisrael, by a non-Kohen, to a woman, and she is, yes, thereby married. That would indicate that Toivas Hanah is mamon, is actual financial monetary value. Otherwise, how is the woman mekudeshes? How does she become married? Amar Lei, Ula responds, the Mishnah is no question unto me. Hacha, the Yisrael, our Mishnah is talking about a Yisrael, Shenaflu Loi Tevolim. Tevolim is the plural form of the word Tevel. Tevel is untithed produce. You're dealing here with a Yisrael that inherited produce that was not tithed, mi beis avi imoy kohen, from his maternal grandfather, who happened to be a kohen. So a kohen, when he has untithed produce, what does the kohen do with it? The kohen would set aside, he would actually tithe, but the truma that he set aside is something he himself is entitled to. He can eat it. In this case, we have a, and as such, by the way, and here is the main point as far as Ula is concerned, the Kohen, when he receives truma, he, not only does he have the right to eat it, he can sell the truma to another Kohen, and he receives money for that sale, and that money, he can do with it whatever he wants. So that truma in the possession of a Kohen is something of actual value. As we just illustrated, the Kohen can sell the truma that he receives. In this case, we have the maternal grandfather who was a Kohen. He didn't have a chance to tithe his produce yet. He passed away. This Yisrael grandson of his inherits the untithed produce from his grandfather Kohen. And now the Gemara introduces one more point. The Kosovar, and we are of, this is of the opinion, Matonos shelo hurmu kemisha hurmu damyon. Matonos are, is a reference to the tithes that haven't yet been hurmu, means separated, literally lifted up, but it means separated. Tithes that are latent within the untithed produce, in our mind's eye, are considered as if they have already been tithed. And that grandfather Kohen, therefore, had in his possession truma that has actual monetary value, and here the grandson inherited from him, and that grandson, being that the truma was already in the possession of a Kohen, this grandson, even though he's a non-Kohen, has a right to sell it to a Kohen, so that the truma that he's using to marry the woman is truma that has built into it a sale right. This should not be confused with a case of a Yisrael who hasn't given truma to a Kohen yet, who happens to have untithed produce. Even if he himself tithes it, that truma needs to be given to a Kohen. It wasn't in a Kohen's possession yet at all. That's a different story. And as far as Ula is concerned, that is not the kind of truma that you would be able to marry a woman with. That's gets you back into the issue of Toivas Hanoh, and Ula says Toivas Hanoh Eino Mamon. But the Mishnah is talking about a case where the truma was already in the possession of the maternal grandfather Kohen, and as such, the truma that is here in the Tevel, that the grandson will separate, is something of actual value insofar as he could sell it to a Kohen and get cash for it, and instead of that he gives it to a woman who will in turn on her own sell it to a Kohen and get the cash value. Ba'amine Rabbi Chiya bar Oven Meirav Huna Toibas Hano Mamon o Eino Mamon. Rabbi Chiya bar Oven asks Rav Huna, is Toibas Hano Mamon or not? Omar Le Tenisua, Rav Huna says, well, you can answer your question from the following source. Hamekadesh Betruma, and this source should be very familiar. It's the third time we're reading it in the last few minutes. It's our Mishnah. Rav Huna says, well, from our Mishnah, you see that you can Mekadesh a woman with Trumos indicating that Toiva Sano is Mammon. HaMekadesh B'Trumos U'V'Maisos U'V'Matonos B'Mei Chatos U'V'Vrachatos Arezul Mikudeshes V'Afilu Yisrael. Omalei, so Reb Chiya Bar Oven says back, our Mishnah, V'Lavu Kimno B'Yisrael, She'Noflu Lo Tevolim Mibes Avi Imoy Kohen. Did we not already, we saw Ula do this, did we not already explain that the Mishnah is not talking about a fresh truma that was never in the possession of a Kohen? The Mishnah is talking about a case of truma that was part of Tevel that was already in the possession of a Kohen. And that is not an example anymore of mere Tovas Hanah. That's truma that has actual monetary value vis-a-vis the sale that can be conducted with it. So Rav Huna tried to answer Rav Chiya Bar Ovin from our Mishnah, and Rav Chiya Bar Ovin, then let's say he derailed Rav Huna's answer. The Gemara continues at the top of Omid Beis. Omar Lay, so Rav Huna, upon hearing Rav Chiya Bar Ovin's response, he says, Hutsoat. At this point, Rav Chiya Bar Ovin, hearing Rav Huna say, Hutsoat, Ichsif, he got embarrassed. Hu Savar, Rav Chiya Bar Ovin, thought that Rav Huna, by saying Hutsoat, is Mishmaitze Komale. Hutsoat means to exit, to take out, meaning that you are saying something that is removed from learning. What you said is inaccurate. So Rav Chiya Bar Ovin took that as an insult, and he was embarrassed. Rashi at the top line says, Hutsoat, Hu Savar Mishmaitz Komalei, Motsei At Mishmuazu. You are removed from this topic of learning. Nira Shena Tochochomba. It seems that you're not wise in this matter. Rashi gives then another explanation for Hutsoat, but for our purposes, Rav Chiya Bar Ovin, upon hearing Rav Huna's response, he got embarrassed. Omar Lay, Rav Huna recognized this, and he says, you didn't understand me. Hachiku amino. What I was saying to you is, Rav Asimi de Hutsal. Koi kavosech. You notice we've dashed under Hutsal. The word Hutsal at is a way of saying a person from Hutsal. It's a name of a place. And what Rav Huna was saying was that your take on the Mishnah, the case of the truma that was part of untied Tevel that he inherited from his maternal grandfather, the Kohen, is something that Rav Asi from Hutsal says, and Rav Huna was saying that Rav Asi de Hutsal Koi Kavosech holds like you. So that you have a fundamental machlokes amoroyim in how to understand the Mishnah. If you learn the Mishnah at face value, you would come out with the conclusion that Tevas Hanah is Mammon. A non-Kohen using trumos that haven't been in the possession of a Kohen yet, and marrying a woman with it, what is the woman getting out of it? Nothing more than the right to decide to which Kohen to give it. That's Tevas Hanah. And if she's married, that means it's Mammon, it's something of actual value. The other school of thought, represented by Ula and Rav Chiya Bar Ovin, holds, no, the Mishnah is not talking about original truma that was never in the possession of a Kohen, but rather trumas that were once in the possession of a Kohen, and in, as far as the Mishnah is concerned, were inherited by a grandson who is using trumas that were already in the possession of a Kohen to marry a woman, and that kind of truma has actual monetary value. As we go further, the Gemara raises a question. You'll notice we have a long question marking. The Gemara will open with the suggestion that maybe the issue of Tevas Hanah, Mammon or not, is a machlokas tanoim. Before we get into the actual Gemara, let's glance at the side. We have a topic heading. Hagoine Tivloi Shochavero, a thief steals untithed produce of his friend. Machloikis Tanoim, we'll see a Tanaic controversy. Im Haganov Mishalem Avur Kol HaTevel, does the thief, upon being caught, have to pay for all of the produce? Oirak al demei chulin shaboy, or only for the chulin content of it. You see, once you remove the respective tithes, we're going to use very simple numbers right now without getting into actual halachically accurate details. The 100% of the produce is the entire tevel value. When you remove the tithes, you remove truma, you remove maaser rishon, maaser sheni, those tithes you take off. You're taking off over 20% of the produce for tithe purposes. So that which remains, the 78% of the produce that remains after you tithe, that is the chulin. So we now turn back to the Gemara. Nemo ketanoi. Shall we say that the shita of ula, or the issue of toiva sano moman or not, is in fact a machlokes tanoim. Hagoinev tivloi shel chaveroi. A thief steals untithed produce. Mishalim lo demei tivlo shel chavero divrei rebi. The thief has to pay for the entire fruit value, including the shrumas and maestras that were in that tevel. And that's Rebbe's opinion. Rabbi Yossi bar Avin Omer, Eino Mishalem Elo Demei Chulin Sheboi. Rabbi Yossi says, no, he'll pay only 79%, 79% of the value of what he stole. In other words, as far as Rabbi Yossi Buda is concerned, the thief doesn't have to compensate for the latent trumas and maisers that were in there. And, of course, it's quite obvious that the trumas and maisers that were in there were something that the original owner couldn't have himself eaten. At best, he could have decided to whom to give it. So, my lav behol klamifli. What must be the machlokes? The more sova Rebbe holds, Rebbe says you have to compensate for all of the produce, including the trumas and maestras that were in there, because Rebbe holds toiva sano momon. The choice, the prerogative to choose to whom to give it is of money value. So you have to compensate the original owner that now doesn't have the produce in his possession. The thief stole it, so the thief has to compensate him for the trumas and maestras. Rabbi Yossi Buda says, no, he doesn't get any compensation for the tithe value that was in there. All he gets is for the what would have remained after the produce was tithed, that which the balabos, the original owner, could have personally eaten. So at this point, it would appear that the issue of toiva sana, is it classified as momon or not, is a machlokes tanoim. As we go on in the Gemara, you'll notice some numbering, and on the side of the Gemara we have a mivneh, a structural note, because as we go on in the Gemara, you're going to notice a double underline, which represents one of our series markings. Dalid Chuvos, on the side we're reading under the mivneh, Dalid Chuvos, four responses to the question of shall we say toivus is a machlokas tanoim? Eich loy lahamid machlokas tanoim betoivus hanomamon. Four approaches in dealing with the Tanaic controversy above to explain them in such a way that toivus hanom is not going to be the subject of their machlokas. So now we continue in the Gemara. After having asked the question, shall we say toivus hanom mamon is a machlokas tanoim? The Gemara continues, lo, it's not. That is not the machlokas tanoim. De kule almo toivas hano eino momo. As far as we are concerned, everyone will agree that toivas hano is not momo. Very similar to Ula's approach at the opening of the Gemara. The hocha, And here in the Tanaic source, Bitvolim Shinoflu Lo Mi Beis Avi'imoy Kayhein, the source is describing the victim of the theft as being the grandson whose maternal grandfather was a Kohen, Uvamat, and he had inherited untithed produce. Uvamatona shalohumu kamishuhumu damion komifligi. Komifligi means the machlokas. The machlokas concern how do you look at latent tithes? These are the tithes that haven't yet been separated. Now, we have to, and as we said, we're talking about unseparated latent tithes, but the tevel had fallen, come to him from his maternal grandfather, the Kohen. So what's the what are the two opinions? Mor Sovar, Rebbe holds that though the tithes were not separated, Mor Sovar Kamisha Hor Mudamion, we view them as if they were separated, and since you're dealing with him having inherited from his maternal grandfather, the Kohen, it had actual value to him. And it was stolen. So the thief has to compensate for that as well, for all of the produce, including the Trumas and Maestras. And Umor Sovar, Rabbi Yoshi Biuda says, Lav Kami Shehor Mudamyon. They are not viewed as having already been separated. And once again, we emphasize, we're working with the opinion that Toivas and Ain Amomen. So you have basically of unseparated ties that don't have any independent Truma identity. It's true that his maternal grandfather was a Kohen, but the Trumas that are in there didn't develop their own Truma identity. And therefore, the thief doesn't have to compensate the victim for that. V'iboy esema de kuli almo, another approach, you'll see it's a type of build-up approach. Everyone holds kimi shahurmu damyon. The untithed produce is as if it was already separated. And Rashi adds, very importantly, the Rashi across the mirror, you'll notice there's a star in the Rashi that we've placed. We will view the untithed as if it's already been tithed. The Torah says, no, eino momen. The hochop lav denoflu lo mibes avi'imoy kohen askinon. Here we're not talking about a case of him having inherited from his maternal grandfather the Kohen like we did in answer one. Elo shigolu ba'artsoi, produce that grew in his own domain. The taimo de Rebbe who says that the thief has to compensate for all of it, and we'll continue reading in the Rashi as means of as by way of an introduction to the Gemara, which as usual is rather terse. So why does Rebbe hold that the thief has to pay for all of the produce? The reason for Rebbe is Mishum de Islay de Shmuel. Rebbe accepts Shmuel's approach to the whole topic of tithing. The Omar Shmuel holds chito achas poiteres asakri. When you're dealing with trumas, one stalk of grain, since the Torah does not define percentages or amounts, one stalk of grain poiteres asakri exempts the rest of the produce from needing any further truma tithing. Hilchoch Omar le bal hatevel el haganav. The victim says to the can say to the thief, you know, you stole from me tevel, but you should realize everything you stole from me is really my own. Kula didi hu. I know that I'm not a Kohen, and I know it was never in the possession of a Kohen, but nevertheless, as far as what you stole from me was something that I could have benefited from. De patane nafshi bechito achas l'truma. I could have exempted myself with one stalk of truma, give that to a Kohen, and all the rest would have remained my own. V'chipolig Rebbe Olei de Rabbi Yossi Behuda, the argument between Rebbe and Rabbi Yossi Behuda concerns Petruma Lechud Polig, regards the Truma amount in the untithed produce. Aval b'meiser moide delav bal devorim didehu. With regard to meiser, which is a tithe that's given to the Levium, Rebbe will agree, will admit that the original owner has no claim against the thief, because the thief, in taking the meiseris as part of the tevel, wasn't depriving the original owner of anything. Meiser is something, is a tithe that has a stated quantity percentage, i.e. one-tenth, that must be given to a Levi, and hence it's not something that the Balabayas would have been able to keep for himself. So we turn back to the Gemara. We'll read again number 2, Iboy Yisema Dekule Alma Kemi Shehur Mudamyon. The untithed produce, the tevel, is as if the tithes have been removed. And as Rashi told us, we're focusing on the truma value. We didn't mention earlier, but truma in general is one's expected to separate 2% of his produce as truma. That's without recognizing Shmuel's din, which we will go, we'll cite in a minute. What else does everyone hold by? V'toyva sana ena moman. And what else did we say? The tevel, according to approach number 2, the tevel that was stolen was never in the possession of a kohen. It's tevel, it's untied produce from the man's own fields. V'hocha b'di Shmuel komifligi. The machlokas Rebbe and Rabbi Yossi Behuda concerns, do you accept Shmuel's approach? D'yomar Shmuel chito achas priteres esakri. One stalk of grain would have been enough to give to a kohen and thereby exempt all of your produce from needing any further truma tithe. D'mor islay d'Shmuel, Rebbe accepts Shmuel's approach, and therefore the owner, as we saw in Rashi, tells the thief, you know, you stole my tevel, including the truma in there. I could have benefited from all of that truma minus one stalk of grain, so you have to pay me for all of the tevel. And we say all the tevel, we're talking about the truma aspect of the tevel. And umor less lay d'Shmuel, Rabbi Yossi, Rabbi Huda doesn't agree with Shmuel that you can't get away with just one tithe, and therefore you have to give the full 2% to the Kohen, and hence the owner cannot demand that from the thief. V'boyesema, a third approach to Kulei Alma, less Lehu de Shmuel, that all the Tanoim above Rebbe and Rebbe Suda do not hold from Shmuel. Well, if you don't hold from Shmuel, how do you explain Rebbe in demanding compensation for the truma? V'hocha hainu taima de Rebbe, and the following is the reason for Rebbe why he demands compensation. De kansu rabbonon laganov. The rabbis imposed a fine upon the thief. What business do you have stealing other people's stuff? True, the truma is not something that the balabos, the original owner, would have been able to benefit from, but you had no right stealing, and therefore pay him for everything. V'boyesema, a fourth approach, de kule alma is lehu de Shmuel, to the contrary or the opposite of approach 3, everyone holds from Shmuel, and that all of the teva was shayach, was relevant to the balabayas. He could have given one stalk of grain and thereby kept the rest of the truma, in addition to, of course, the bulk, the chulin. V'hocha hainu taim de Rabbi Yossi Yehuda. And the reason for Rabbi Yossi Yehuda is saying that the balabayas does not deserve compensation. De kansuhu rabbonon lebalabayas. The rabbonon imposed a fine, a loss upon the owner, he should not have delayed tevel, have kept tevel in his possession. If a thief came along and stole tevel, that's a sign that the balabais was not so diligent in immediately tithing his produce. And to make the point that you've done something wrong, Mr. Balabais, you will not get compensation, says Rabbi Yossi Buda, for the truma content, even though it's something that you could have benefited from based on Shmuel, Chita Achas Poiteres Es Akri. We glance at the side of the Gemara in our margin where we have a Nosei topic heading. Mosai Nitan Lekabel Schar Avur Mechatos. When can one accept payment for his dealing with the Mechatos? The Mechatos, we mentioned earlier, is the water which eventually is mixed with the ashes of the Pora Aduma, the red heifer, and used for purifying those that were defiled to the dead. Aleph, Schar Milui, there's payment made to one who draws the water from the live spring. Spring water is what the Torah demands for the Mechatos. The drawing of the water involves a certain amount of effort, of tircha. So one who draws the water for the purpose of the Mechatos is entitled to be paid for his services. Then we say that's mutter. It's mutter to receive payment for drawing the water. Beis, schar hazah, payment for sprinkling the Pora Aduma water, the Mechatos, on the tome, on the defiled individual. The act of sprinkling is a very minor physical form of exertion, and to receive payment for that, also, that's prohibited. As we go on in the Gemara text itself, we present the issue of getting paid for the Mechatos as a seeming Tanaic contradiction. And the resolution of the contradiction will be in the form of what we just said in our introductory remarks. The Gemara. Tanan. We have a quote from our Mishnah, and I think I've lost count, but I think this might be the fourth time we're quoting our Mishnah, including the actual reading of the Mishnah itself, today. So here it is. Hamekadesh betrumas uvemaisus uvematonus, and now we've dashed underlined the main thing for this discussion. Bemechatos uveefer ubeefer pora arezu mikudeshes viafilu Yisrael. One who marries a woman with, amongst other things, the mechatos and the efer chatos, the marriage is effective. Ve'ra minu. And now we raise a seeming contradiction, a Mishnah in Maseches Bechoros. Hanoitel schar, one who takes payment, lodun, for judging cases, to serve, as for serving as a judge. Dinov betelim, his rulings are void. This source has a very negative attitude, very negative approach to people who take pay for a variety of activities. It's taking pay for serving as a judge, for judging people, and lehoid, one who takes payment to serve as a witness, eduso betelo. So his testimony is considered void. Lahazos ulekadesh. Lahazos is the sprinkling of the Pora Aduma water on a tome mace, on someone who was defiled to the dead. Lekadesh is adding the ash to the water. The ash of the Pora Aduma, of the red heifer that was burnt, its ash is added to the water drawn from the live spring. So lekadesh is the process of putting the ash into the water. One who takes pay for these things, meimov meimaora viefroi efer makle. The water is like the water of a cave. It's rancid. smelly, rotting water. And the afer is like mere afer, maklim, mere ash, having no significance. Well, what do we see from here? Our Mishnah indicates that the mechatas nefer para have value, and you can get money for it, you can sell it, and hence when he gives that to the woman, so she's married. The second source indicates that you can't get any money for these things. Omar Abaye, lo kashio, there is no contradiction. Kan, our Mishnah, which speaks about the woman being mikudeshes, b'schar hava umiloi. It's the payment one would receive for transportation of it, hava, and from transferring the transporting, let's say, the poraduma ash from one place to another, and schar miloi, the schar for filling the water up, drawing the water from the spring, as Rashi says, and we've dashed underlined this on the third line under the Gemara text, the milsu de tirchahi. These are activities that involve extending yourself, troubling yourself, and the Torah doesn't expect you to do that for nothing. So you can get paid for drawing the water, for transporting the ash from one place to another. Kan, the Tanaic source from Maseches Bechoros, which was opposed to any payment, Beschar Hazov Vekidush. That's getting paid for the act of sprinkling or for the act of adding the ash to the water. There's no tircha involved. There's no extension or extending of oneself, troubling oneself in doing those things, and hence it comes under the category of those things that one is not supposed to take pay for. Daiko nami. Careful reading of our Mishnah will in fact reveal that the Mishnah is not talking about the act of sprinkling. Dekotoni hocha, in our Mishnah it said that he married the woman b'mei chatos u'be'efer porov, the water, the ash, indicating they weren't mixed together yet. So the reference to the mei chatos is the drawing of the water, which you're entitled to get paid for. The efer porov is the ash transportation value. So that if my understanding is, if a man, let us say, who drew the water, and he has a wage or a salary coming to him for having done that, and he gives the water to the woman, she can then demand the payment for the services, and hence it has value to her. Likewise, the ash that he gives her, and let us say she transports the ash from one place to another, or he had done so and hadn't got paid for it yet, and she asks for the payment, she is thereby married with that. She's received value. The Katani Hasam, there, in Maseches Bechoros, the terms that were used were lihazos, u likadesh. Those are verb forms. The payment for the act of sprinkling, for the act of kiddush, for adding the ash to the water. That, we said, one is not to be paid for because there's no tircha involved, there's no extending of oneself, and hence the objection to receiving payment. Shma mina. So this is conclusive, that, namely, that the language of the Mishnah, of the respective Tanaic sources, support what Abaye had said, the distinction that Abaye had made. Before we conclude, let us remind you that if you wish to be in touch with us in order to access marked Gemaras, we can be reached at gmarkings@gmail.com. With that, we conclude our shiur for today.